In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Yeah, it's time to talk movies. Alan Adams of The Main Edge joining us for Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10 and the Bangor Drive-In. Hello, Al.
Hello, how are you?
Doing very well, thank you. How's your Monday going so far?
Oh, not too bad. You know, I'm sitting around sweating a bunch, but aren't we all?
Yeah, it's that kind of day out there. How was your weekend?
It was okay. Also pretty sweaty. kept pretty close to home, actually. Like, stepped out a little bit, like little things, like, we went to pick up our farm share at the farmer's market downtown, and we did a beer pickup at OBC in Orono. But for the most part, we stayed pretty close to the old homestead, which was nice. It was nice to just sort of kick back and relax and not worry too much about the chaos going on out there in the world.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Well, and you saw some movies, too?
I did. I saw three movies.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, let's get right to it and find out what you thought.
All right. Well, let's start with maybe the least familiar of the three to the regular viewer. It's a movie called Baby Splitters.
Baby Splitters?
Yeah, I'm going to let that sink in for a second. Yes, Baby Splitters.
Yikes.
One word.
Okay.
It's one of those sorts of movies where... every once in a while a movie comes along and you get the single sentence description and it basically dares you to watch it. And that's what this movie is. So basically the gist is two couples, each of whom are conflicted about having children, decide to team up and have one child that they'll share between them.
Okay, what a plan.
Tell me you're not curious about that movie, Rich.
Now
tell me you're not curious.
It is a morbid curiosity, and yet it's there.
So, yeah, obviously it's ridiculous. But through the ridiculousness, it's actually kind of a nice sort of look at, the complex nature of relationships and what it means to want kids or not to want kids, and how it's not always as simple as just making a choice. Like, when you have a couple that has very different ideas about the ideas that come with raising children or having children, some people are more ready than others, and that's kind of what this movie is about. So you've got two couples. You've got Jeff, played by Danny Pudi, probably best known as Abed on Community, and Sarah, played by Emily Chang. They're a married couple, and they're trying to decide whether to have a kid. Sarah feels like she's ready, but Jeff, who's a tech guy for a farm-to-table startup, he's not sure he's prepared. So they go back and forth about the idea, and they can't really come to any sort of agreement. They're friends with this other couple. There's Don, played by Eddie Alfano. He's a gym owner. And then there's Taylor, played by Myara Walsh, who's a dancer. They're in a similar boat, but the sort of gender roles are reversed. Don really wants to have a kid. But Taylor's still working as a dancer, and so she's not really in a place where she necessarily wants to get pregnant. So they share their concerns with each other, couple friends having couple conversations like they do. And then, but after a couple glasses of wine, Jeff, as a joke, proposes the idea of the couples coming together and have a baby that all four of them would raise. That's where things get interesting. Like, they initially laugh it off, like you do, because it's a literally insane idea. But it's not long before they start seriously considering. Obviously complicated. The initial plan is for in vitro fertilization, which proves to be prohibitively expensive. Ditto artificial insemination. And so their fertility specialist offers up the solution of doing it the old-fashioned way.
Oh, well.
Which means that Sarah and Don would do the deed and make the baby, and so they could share the baby. Again, weird, particularly weird since both Jeff and Taylor insist on being present in the moment. it gets even weirder when the pregnancy happens because the tensions start to mount, No one really was prepared for the emotional chaos that these actions would bring to pass. The relationships deteriorate, and no one's really fully able to deal with the consequences. Leaving aside the fact that no one seems to have really taken into consideration how this might impact, you know, the baby.
God.
Look, this movie could have been a disaster, like an abject disaster. There are so many ways in which this kind of concept could go off the rails in a way that's not just bad, but, like, off-putting. It could have been really gross, to put it simply. And the fact that it isn't is a testament to the talents of the people involved. It's absurd. Like, we can all recognize that it's absurd. But the absurdity allows for a fairly forthright exploration of the decisions that lead to parenthood. Like, the fundamental lunacy of the plan, offers up a window through which we can see each of these people, like, reckoning with their feelings with regards to having kids. And they're all dealing with the sort of roller coaster of impending parenthood, even as it's, you know, rendered even more bizarre by the circumstances of the situation. It's fraught emotionally, but it's pretty funny. There are a couple of subplots that really revolving around Jeff. Like, Danny Pudi's ostensibly the star of the movie. We see his workplace situation, and we get to see him spending time with his therapist and stuff like that. They're amusing enough, but I don't know if they're necessary. Like, they ultimately, I think, are more distractions from the main storyline. The performances are really good. Like, everyone brings a very genuine sort of energy. Like, there's no winking and nodding, which is, I think, is important when you're dealing with a concept as bizarre as this one. They do a really good job of sort of working their way through the weirdness. The supporting cast, they're fine, but they more or less fade into the background. Like, look, the movie doesn't fully work. It's clunky. It loses focus. But it works a hell of a lot better than it probably should have. So, I will say you don't necessarily need to seek baby splitters out, but if you wind up watching it, I don't know that you'll necessarily regret it.
All right, that's number one from Baby Splitters. How do we top that, Al?
Next up, I think we're going to talk about Animal Crackers.
Okay.
And no, I'm sorry, it's not the classic Marx Brothers movie. This is a new, but we'll get into that in a second, an animated feature that's currently streaming on Netflix. It's one of those movies when you hear a movie's been on the shelf for a really long time, like, it raises some questions, and you have some doubts regarding a movie's quality. And this movie's one of those. It's from Blue Dream Studios. It was an American-Chinese collaborative effort actually was finished back in 2017. And it actually had a theatrical release in China 2 years ago. Hmm. But the various efforts at domestic distribution kept falling through, and so eventually Netflix took the reins and they released it themselves. And, you know, it's funny, it's too bad, because this movie's not the kind of movie that deserves the stigma that comes with that kind of remove. I mean, it's not great, but it's good enough to have received a theatrical release here. Like, Rich, I've seen a lot of garbage in movie theaters.
Yes, you have.
Particularly animated garbage. And this movie is certainly better than the worst of what I've seen that has gotten, big, wide releases and huge ad pushes and the whole shebang. There's some really quality pieces here. It's got a stacked cast. Like, you won't believe the people who are in this movie. The music is phenomenal. Animation's a little on the low rent side, and the story's kind of, shoulder shrug. But, like I said, I've sat through through much worse. The basic gist is you have a traveling circus run by the Huntington brothers. There's Horatio, who is the sort of face of the operation, the flashy guy, voiced by Ian McKellen. And then his brother Bob is the quiet behind-the-scenes guy. He's played by a longtime voice actor, James Arnold Taylor, best known for... He's Obi-Wan Kenobi in the Clone Wars animated TV series. They have a nice partnership, but then there's a woman. There's a woman named Talia shows up, and things get complicated. Horatio wants to woo her for himself, but she only has eyes for Bob. When Horatio finds out that the two of them are in love, he delivers an ultimatum. Talia goes or he goes. And Bob, bless his heart, chooses love.
Aww.
He goes on to start his own circus called Buffalo Bob's Rootin' Tootin' Animal Circus, world-renowned for its incredible animal acts. And along the way, Bob's nephew, Owen, who's a regular audience member, meets a little girl named Zoe. The connection is immediate. They grow together as they grow up, and they get so close that that grown-up Owen, voiced by John Krasinski, and grown-up Zoe, Emily Blunt, decide to get married. Of course, Zoe's father, who owns the local dog biscuit factory, named Mr. Woodley, voiced by Wallace Shawn, disapproves. In an attempt to reconcile with his father-in-law, Owen takes a job at the factory where he is immediately made a taste tester. That's right, Owen works as a taste tester in a dog biscuit factory.
All right.
But what happens is there's a mysterious fire that destroys the circus, and Bob and Talia go missing. And so Owen is tasked with taking over the circus. The circus and a mysterious box of animal crackers. These animal crackers are the secret to the success of Buffalo Bob's circus, because as the head clown Chesterfield, voiced by Danny DeVito, explains it, eating an animal cracker will turn the eater into that animal.
Okay. And
so the magic animal crackers are what makes the incredible animal acts of Buffalo Bob's Rootin' Tootin' Circus possible. But Horatio, along with his minions, has discovered the secret. And he knows about the animal crackers and will stop at nothing to get his hands on those crackers. And it's up to Owen, Zoe, and their young daughter, Mackenzie, to do whatever it takes to save the circus and help their friends. It's a busy movie, Rich.
It sounds like it, yes. A lot going on
there's
there.
There's a lot going on. Not necessarily a bad thing, because the pace actually helps to mask some of the film's shortcomings in the animation department. But some of the narrative details kind of get lost at the shuffle. But again, it's not like it really matters, because it's, there's probably one too many subplots. It's the sort of movie that feels a little thin and kind of padded at the same time. But that being said, there's a lot of good stuff. There's some legitimately strong visual gags. And the humor is solid and age appropriate. And the music is incredible. Bear McCreary did the music, and there are original songs from like Huey Lewis the News and Toad the Wet Sprocket and Michael Bublé. There's this it's this incredible soundtrack, and McKellen sings twice.
Wow.
And the voice cast obviously is stacked. Like, you heard those names. Like, all of these people are incredible. And I didn't even get to mention Gilbert Gottfried as Horatio's main henchman, or Sylvester Stallone as Bullet Man, the circus's human cannonball.
Holy cow.
Yeah, like I said, again, it's not the best animated movie you'll ever see, but it is far from the worst. It's got its problems, but the cast is talented, the music is great, and the gags are pretty good. It's imperfect, but the kids will definitely dig it. And ultimately, with an animated Netflix movie, you don't really need more than that.
There you go. All right, that's Animal Crackers. And last but perhaps least, I don't know, we'll find out.
So I saw the movie Radioactive, which is sort of a biopic of sorts about Marie Curie.
Oh, wow.
It's currently streaming on Amazon Prime Video. It stars Rosamund Pike as Marie Curie, and it's basically an attempt to sort of reckon with the legacy of Curie's work. It looks back on her life as a scientist, while also sort of trying to come to terms with how her discoveries have impacted the world. Since I love the idea. Like, and on paper, it seems like it could work, but unfortunately, it doesn't quite coalesce. The director's woman named Marjane Satrapi. The screenplay is by Jack Thorne, adapted from Lauren Redness's 2010 book, same name, Radioactive. It's the sort of movie that's trying a little too hard to be, like, air quotes, important. Like, it's got all those sort of awards bait checkboxes ticked,
yeah,
but the pieces don't necessarily fit together quite like they should. And I don't mean to imply that there's nothing of value here. Like, the filmmaking choices are interesting, and Rosamund Pike is outstanding. Like, she's great as Madame Curie. It just doesn't quite achieve the heights that it's very transparently aspiring to reach, and it just falls a little bit short. The basics, the waning years of the 19th century, Marie Sklodowska, which is Marie Curie's maiden name. She's seeking support for her work. She's this brilliant scientific mind, producing amazing and thought-provoking work, but her status is undermined due to her gender. Like, she can't gain the respect or the support of her peers, and is constantly getting sort of, you know, bumped out for, you know, for more mediocre minds who are being advanced solely because they're men. But her personal and professional lives receive a huge boost when she crosses paths with Pierre Curie, played by Sam Riley. He's a guy who's got his own issues with the establishment. He's familiar with her work. She's familiar with his work. He offers her space in which to continue her work. And despite initial misgivings, she slowly grows to trust him as a colleague, a collaborator, and eventually as her husband. And so the fruits of their labor, the discovery of new elements, radium and polonium, and dealing with their properties, specifically the fact that they emit waves of energy, which Marie Curie dubs radioactivity. And both, it's remarkable to think about, but, you know, Marie Curie is only one of only four individuals, to receive two different Nobel Prizes.
Mm.
They won for the discovery of radium and polonium, but also for radioactivity. So she has, you know, she has prizes in both physics and chemistry, which, you know, is really kind of remarkable to think about. But again, there are unexpected consequences to the discovery of these of radioactivity. There are some poor health and illness issues following those who work with these elements. And there's also some tragedy that befalls the lives of the Curies and their young family. We watch Marie grow older, and she's sort of left to confront the reality of what her work actually means, both to her and to the world. Now, interspersed through this sort of retelling of the story, and this is where it gets a little weird, there are these moments outside of her life from the years after she passed away, sort of snapshots of how her discoveries impacted the world going forward. So we get a glimpse of a child getting radiation treatment for cancer in the 1950s. And we see the bomb being dropped on Hiroshima. And we get to see the Chernobyl disaster. Like, all of these sorts of snapshot glimpses of sort of the long-term ramifications, both good and bad, of her discoveries. It's an interesting device that I really wish worked better, because it's they try to fold it into the narrative in a sort of seamless way that that just winds up reading as a little disingenuous. You know, they're trying to make it seamless, but instead it's all the more jarring because they're clearly trying to do it. Like, they're trying to hide those themes. And once you know that that's what they're doing, like, you can't help but see them. In my opinion, I think the movie's probably better off just skipping that stuff and just focusing on Marie Curie's story, because that's the one we're engaged with, not these sort of clumsy efforts to marry her accomplishments to the future they helped create. But that being said, when we are in that story, it's really fascinating. Like, she was such a fascinating figure, and just such a brilliant and incredible person, especially in a time when women simply weren't allowed to be that way. Like, she wasn't, you know, she's so iconic, and she was so just irascible and so sure of her own abilities, and it was just so, she's just a great, great woman. And it's a great performance. Like, Rosamund Pike is wonderful. The truth is, like, the a lot of the film's rough edges are very nicely smoothed by the excellence of her work. You know, it's the sort of decade-spanning role that's it can be kind of corny when you start introducing like the makeup and the prosthetic effects and all that stuff. But she handles it really, really nicely. Like Marie Curie was a complicated person and, you know, someone who contained multitudes, and Pike really does a great job of sort of evoking that vibe. It's a movie that clearly wants to win awards. And while in many cases it fell short, I think in terms of Pike's performance, it's an exception because she really is remarkable in this movie. The rest of the cast is fine. Like it's a little uneven. Like some people are good, some people are okay. But really, it's the Rosamund Pike show, and I think that's a good thing. She's really quite good. Again, it's a movie that could have been better and probably should have been better, but the structural choices don't work, but Rosamund Pike definitely does. So that's a solid tribute, I think.
There you go. Three of them for your consideration now with the expert advice of Alan Adams here on Pass the Popcorn. Thank you, Al.
Hey, no problem. Hey, I just wanted to say one thing real quick.
Yeah.
Not to defend his actions, but the strip club chicken wings NBA player, Lou Williams of the Los Angeles Clippers, I will say, I heard something from a couple of different sources that would seem to indicate that he was not lying when he was talking about how much he enjoyed the food at that particular establishment. I heard a rumor that there's actually something on the menu named after him.
Oh, wow.
I'm just saying. I don't know if it's true or not. That's what I heard. So, again, like you probably shouldn't be getting wings at the strip club if you're supposed to be in the bubble. But
I have a new life goal. Something at the strip club menu named after him. Wow.
So many comments that I could make but probably should not, so I'll keep them to myself.
The FCC might have something to say about
there
it.
You go. Hey, will we be chatting with you Wednesday about the new Main Edge?
I believe we will.
Oh, fantastic. My day just got remarkably better. I look forward to it. Have a good couple of days, and we'll see you then.
Hey, you too, man.
Thanks, Al. Alan Adams, Main Edge, Pass the Popcorn.